Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings. Here's the song. Good night. Good morning, John. How are you doing?
Well, hello, Janessa. And how is thy holy hammer today?
Rather sullen and subdued.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I heard you kind of had a reconciliation with our co-host Don Gallimo.
Yes, we talked about a lot of things last night, including Fatima, Portugal, where three young shepherd kids saw a vision of Mary six times. And we talked about the Pope and all kinds of stuff.
Yes. Wow.
Can I start off with a nice verse?
Yeah, go for it.
Psalm 32, blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. Blessed is the man to whom the Lord imputes no iniquity, in whose spirit there is no deceit. When I declared not my sin, my body wasted away, though my groaning all day long, through my groaning all day long. For day and night thy hand was heavy upon me, my strength was dried up as the heat of summer. I acknowledged my sin to thee, I did not hide my sin. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord. Then thou didst forgive me the guilt of my sin. Therefore, let everyone who is godly offer prayer to thee at a time of distress. In the rush of the waters, they shall not reach him. Thou art a hiding place for me. Thou preservest me from trouble. Thou dost encompass me from deliverance. I will instruct you and teach you the way you should go. I will counsel you with my eye upon you. But not like a horse or mule without understanding, which must be curbed with a bit and bridle, else it will not keep with you. Many are the pangs of the wicked, but steadfast love surrounds him who trusts in the Lord. Be glad in the Lord and rejoice, O righteous, and shout for joy, all you upright in heart. Okay, the topic tonight is how to push for a life beyond a marginal existence, especially after someone dies.
Nice. That's something to consider. Well, here's the question: if you could choose, you want to live a life that's beyond normal. If you could have a superpower, what would you choose in that new life?
Gift of spiritual knowledge and to impart it to other people. But if I had to pick a regular superpower, it would be flying wherever I wanted, whenever I wanted, with my own arms.
I'm wondering if you would be flying to things or away from things.
I do that in my car every day. But I would need a superpower for that.
Right. I think myself, there's one or two ways I could go. I suppose if, one thought would be, to live forever. That certainly would, Eve was, God took that away from her because she took of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And then she was going to take, she had the possibility of eating from the tree of life where she would never die. And that was the one thing God said, we got to get her and Adam away from that tree. So that's interesting. But I guess I would want knowledge because I'd want to know, am I doing things the way I'm supposed to, the right way, knowing how things are going to turn out. That would change a lot of things for me, because there wouldn't be any guilt. I wouldn't be sitting there thinking, oh, man, I should have done this or done that. There wouldn't be any.
I guess what I'm aiming at tonight, you were getting close to the point without even knowing where my mindset was. I guess
wow.
I feel now that Agatha died at age 21, that I haven't fulfilled my mission yet. I'm not even close. And I don't want to waste time. I don't want to waste time. I want to figure out what my mission is and complete it.
Nice. I like that. That's something I tell people all the time, is like to know what you're here for and to take hold on it. And then most people live a life distracted. And almost everything we have is just a distraction. You know, you turn on the TV and it's like, come watch us. Let us amuse you. And sometimes there's some good stuff. There's history stuff. There's information stuff. But a lot of times it's just the same stuff over and over. It's just entertainment. It has no value whatsoever. Like an empty calorie. Like a can of soda or something. It tastes good for a little while, but in the big picture, you're just killing yourself with it.
If you enjoy it, though, and life is meant to be enjoyed, it's not a total waste. It just might not be good for you.
I guess it depends on your perspective of life. Is life something to be lived where you're fulfilling a purpose like Christ, or is it something to be enjoyed, which is more into hedonism, you know, and it's like, this is what gives me the most pleasure, the pleasure principle. How say thou, O Jane?
I guess as I get older now, I have one job where I work graveyard all night. So I have to watch TV in order to stay awake, because I'm required to stay awake. So for me, it's kind of a tough question, because I watch Netflix in the office. I don't really watch TV. I get to pick what I watch. Right now I'm watching Message of Our Lady of Fatima, which is a 124-minute film about the signs and wonders three kids saw when Mary visited them in Fatima, Portugal, May 13, 1917. So I guess if you can pick your own shows, you have a wider range and it can be more fulfilling. But if you're just watching Family Guy every night and you are just pissing away time when you could be studying or thinking about maybe going back to college or something, then it could be kind of a waste.
I know.
Unless
I tell
might,
all the time.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But
go ahead. It's your turn.
Well, I was saying, I talk to kids all the time, and the one thing I tell them is, you're going to run out of time. You feel like you got time, or like you can put it together. And I said, there is a time and place for everything. Scripture tells us there is a time to laugh. There's a time to cry. There's a time to live and to die. There are all these different things that we do. But there is a certain point where no matter what you're doing, you're just going to run out of time. And whatever you plan to do or want to do, you probably want to do more of it, but you won't be able to. And so it's planning your life in a way where you achieve those things that you really are here as a priority. Most people don't go about that, and it just slips away from them, you know, all of us, really.
You know, I feel kind of opposite about that lately. I feel like today I didn't do anything. I didn't run any errands. I left work at 9 in the morning, went home, watched TV a half hour, then went to bed in Lauren's bed till 3 o'clock. And then I ran some errands and made dinner and went on a walk in the forest with Lauren and Zach. But I feel like right now I have too much time on my hand and no direction. And I'm 55. I just opened a pop.
That makes sense.
I guess what I'm trying to say is that I feel I don't have enough. I'm short $100. I can't order the teacher license till I have enough money to pay that. And I'm just in the survival mode again, which I have been for 17 years.
Right.
But how am I going to witness to thousands except for this radio show?
Well, I think most people get into that position, you know, all of us. And and I think it's going to get worse with people getting into the survival mode, just with the economy and economics, and we get trapped. And I was, I had a young man from Korea, and he was just admiring me play drums. You know, he wanted to learn how to play drums. I was just showing him some, you know, concepts and techniques, and we just started talking about life. I start telling them about business and how it operates and politicians and money and how corporations, you know, control things and how they vote and how it's not about anything except economics and in many cases greed. And you know, I was sharing things with them that, you know, I know was blowing his mind. And I said, the thing is, you've got to figure out what you're really here for, because you're going to run into some gal along the way that, you know, says she loves you and wants to follow God, and you're like, yeah, you know, this is perfect. And you start having a family, and you're working, and suddenly she wants this, and she wants that, and you're working harder to get things for them, and pretty soon you're busy just getting things, you know, making money, making more money, making decisions that compromise maybe who you are, but you're doing it for the good of the family and for love. And that seems to feel right until you get to a point where you realize you don't really have time to see your family. You know, you're busy making money and serving money, and their big regret is they don't have you around. You know, you think you're meeting the need, their deep need, and it's like they really need you to be around. And you're not.
So does he work two jobs?
No, he doesn't. He's from, his family sent him over here from Korea to study school, going to Santa Monica College and learning the skills and language, so that way he can you know, get an American education and then either use that over here or more likely return home and becoming a successful international businessman in whatever field. You know, kind of like with the, whether it's computer or tech, some kind of tech skill, or could be medical. But it's very common, you know, the kids that come over and they're going to college here, special scholarships, and they're, I would say the most elite, well, maybe they are, you know, come out here. Everything's paid for, and they're just out there to succeed. And kids love God, and they have a whole future in front of them. But what I'm saying is this world just sways you, you know? It distracts you. You get blindsided.
Well, I don't want to feel trapped. I'm not trapped. I'm tired of not having hardly any money left at the end of each paycheck. So now I'm going to save $100 no matter what for every paycheck I have.
That's pretty cool. Do you have
any money per paycheck?
Not really. I'm paying down debt. It's a bad situation because anytime something goes wrong, it sets the whole program back because I'm not moving forward. I will say, having owned property, I always have extra money because you have to. And I mean, just as philosophically, you can't just have $100 in the bank account when you're running, like, you know, 10 properties or a portfolio that's like a you know, a couple million dollars. You have to have several thousand ready at any moment, because if something happens, the whole thing collapses, like a Jenga game, you know, just goes kaboom.
But you used to have that, but you don't anymore, right?
Oh, yeah, no. I still have always kept 20 or 30,000 behind me somewhere, ready to roll. That's even on top of, like, say, being a quarter million in debt. Because when you got that much debt load, you can't just have $50 in the bank. You know, everything will collapse. So, yeah, I always have had, you know, a backup that most people would go, wow, that's a lot of money. You know, $50,000 is a lot of money until you owe like 250,000, you know?
Mm-hmm. I guess
it is kind of. Go ahead. What was
you
interesting
keep,
to. Uh-huh.
You can keep talking. I have nothing to say.
Oh, well, I was going to say
I feel like
that,
a bigger loser.
No. What's interesting is that when I watch movies, especially older ones, but even current ones, where people are killing for $10,000 or they're, you know, they're going to rob $50,000 from the bank or whatever, and it's, they're compromising so many things, and I'm sitting there going, you're doing all this for $50,000? You know, I could see a million or 500, maybe even barely 500,000, but something where you wouldn't have to work for a good, you know, 10, 20, 30 years. But to do something that, you know, you make $50,000 a year, a lot of people do, you know. You're going to kill someone for that? You know, that's crazy. Yeah. And what
I guess my
million,
thing is, go ahead.
What used to be $1 million, I mean, years ago, has changed, really. You know, when people talked about wanting to be a millionaire, you know, homes were like $10,000, $20,000. Now people buy houses, regular houses. If it's in L.A., it's $500,000 to $1 million, you know, to have a house on the west side. It's like, you know, well, I have a place to live, so I'm set for the rest of my life. No, you know, back then you could have 20 or 30 houses would be where the millionaire is, you know? That's changed a lot.
I guess
like
the thing
need-
is that I have barely enough. I work 60 to 80 hours a week. I can only sustain myself. My only Christian reflection is how I treat other people. I really don't have the time or energy to start my own Christian ministry, except for on the radio late at night. But I do want to start my own business, doing something.
Nice.
I want to start this 1970s jean company where we used to soak different things on the bottom of our jeans, like different material.
Oh.
And
nice.
I want to do something cool like that.
That's very cool. In a way, I guess, you know, the hard part of that is that gets so involved with, like, you've got to have manufacturing sources nowadays. So, you know, it would be so cool if we could make it in the U.S., but it's like, okay, I got to now get the labor from Indonesia or India. Kind of like, you know, Jessica Alba, she started her Honest Company. It was a company basically designed to have products that were just totally healthy for kids. You know, they didn't have chemicals and no polluting things, and it'd be just a, kind of a green company. And I think she's in it with a really good heart. I think she's everyone I talk to, she seems to be a real sweetheart in person, in life, real life. And, you know, now that there's a lot of heat on her and her company that a lot of their products aren't so green, and that, you know, it's almost called like a sham company. And I'm thinking, that wasn't her intention at all, you know. But she probably had someone go, we're going to help you, and here's where we'll manufacture this and that. She looks at a list of stuff and goes, that sounds good to me. But she's not going maybe to the country it's made in, or, you know, the plant where they're making, you know, maybe she walks through there one day and they're showing her how this is being made. But they don't really know how it's all, you know, made or where it all came from until some investigator, reporter, you know, exposes everything.
Is it a clothing line?
I think it's like products for kids. Or in other words, let's say shampoo and clothes. She was saying how her kids were allergic to certain things, you know, and so she felt really upset that she couldn't get products, like, you know, like say a shampoo or soap or, you know, things, sunscreen, stuff like that, that you'd put on a kid that wouldn't be natural and healthy and environmentally good. So she has a company. It's called The Honest Company, and the it's been attacked like on Yahoo and different you know websites, and saying The Honest Company not so honest. poor gal.
Well, the thing is that I was just going to do hand designed things in the winter, like make can and then just sell them on eBay. I just started out slow. I wasn't going to start a big company.
Yeah.
It's about being productive. You have to find new ways to be productive. And even if I got my teaching license and taught, it wouldn't be, I want to do something ingenious and different, something that I created.
Right. Oh, so I think that's where the kind of, I won't call it a lie, but kind of the fantasy, I'd say, of America is that we all want to start, you know, or a lot of people want to start their own business. I do. You know, I have several venture ideas I think would have been great. One of them was going to be, what was it called? Something with genes. Oh, Dominant Genes. Had a whole campaign and a whole, you know, advertising shtick. And it was basically, I pitched the idea to a cousin of mine through marriage. And I said, hey, you know, we could start this Dominant Genes. Because basically he was blonde hair, blue eyes, and he married a Latina girl, dark hair, dark eyes. Usually darker genes are dominant. So most, not always, but usually, I mean, if you get a brother man marries a lily white girl, the kid's probably going to have some flavor. You know, you're probably not going to have a totally bleach blonde baby. You know, there are exceptions to that, which is built on dominant genes. But usually darker genes dominate. So he had a couple kids, and they were like blue-eyed, blonde-haired. And so I said, man, you got dominant genes. And so we used to joke about it all the time. You know, whenever he had a decision that was correct, like, you know, a business decision, because he used to build houses, I said, well, you know, you can't be beaten. You got dominant genes. So you know, we wanted to do this whole clothing line. And the point is, you know, 9 out of 10 American businesses fail in the first year. So you can figure that, you know, 100 people in line, you know, 90 of them are going to go home losers. You know, now in your case, you wouldn't go really big, so that's okay. You wouldn't, like, you know, lose millions of dollars in the deal. But people start up companies and they lose their pants, their dominant genes, as it were.
That's interesting. So
yeah,
I was going to, this is kind of an open topic tonight. So since you and I are both trapped in employment and I have some liberties, like I can pick what days I'm going to do the driving job. If I have another conflict, I don't have to do the driving job. But how about you? Are there days where, you know, you have to go into work from 3 to midnight, but you'd rather be doing something else? And how do you cope with that?
It's difficult. Like, I'll give you an example. In this case, I've got some, I'll put it this way.
Some
I've
flexibility?
I've voiced in the future certain, or in the past, certain realities, like I work another job, so I can't be all in, you know, from 8 a.m. in the morning. I need half a day at my other job to function, and then I come to this job. So I'm kind of half-assing one job, and I come over here and, you know, kind of try to keep this together, you know. But I do, you know, I'm pretty good at it. And so what happens every once in a while is the guy who does the morning shift, like he had his son or something in for town, and he couldn't do it. He's going to take a day off. And so I'm the one person who can't take a day off. It's like I have to cover that. So I started, 10:30. Well, to get 10:30, I got to get up and at the minimum 9:30, get ready and bike over here. Because I have the other job, I got to get up earlier, you know, like 7:30 or 8, and pound on some orders for, you know, an hour or two, and then go to work. And then come back after, say, noon. I'll walk the dog, say, from 10:30 to noon. And then I got to go, check order, go home, go online, check orders for, you know, 2 or 3 hours, come back at 3, and work till midnight. In this particular case, I'm covering for the hubby, so I'm working the, you know, the morning shift till 1:30, except there were some delays, and by the time I finished shift, it was 3:30 in the morning, which means I'm going to get home at 4, which means I'm going to shower and do whatever.
That's terrible.
Go to bed at, you know, 5 or 6, you know, and that's if I'm efficient. You know, in this case, I'm, you know, just gassed out, tired, so I'm crashing on the floor for, I mean, not, it wasn't as bad as normal, but, you know, it's like, okay, I'm just going to turn on the TV here, eat some food, think about some stuff, and, you know, I'm kind of in a mode where I don't sleep sometimes as soundly. I mean, I sleep really good when I do, but the point is, it's not like, oh, I'm ready to go to bed. It's more like I'm just going to, you know, take an hour or two nap and then get up and try to, you know, function and catch up with stuff. So it's a different dynamic for me.
That sounds like a lot more stress than my job. My job, I just have 2 hours of paperwork in the beginning, and then I can kick it the rest until 6:30 in the morning, till it's time to make breakfast.
Schlick kind of has a job like that, you know, where you can kind of wing it a bit. I think when you're watching, now in my case, there's a certain level of that watching a dog, you know. So, because the dog becomes your employer, just seeming like if you're taking care of convalescent care, that person becomes your boss. And, you know, if they're disabled or whatever, it's a different dynamic. Until something, of course, goes wrong. But, you know, it's not like 110% concentration. Like, in Slick's case, he watches a gate or door, you know, when people come through. So if no one walks through for an hour, you're really not, you know, doing anything except holding a position. As compared to you fast food, you know, if in a rush hour, you got, you know, like every 10 seconds someone's pulling up to a drive-thru window and you got to kick out orders. It's a different dynamic sometimes.
Yeah, at Lauren's job, sometimes they go 8 hours without it slowing down.
Yes. Yeah, I always used to say the hardest working people that I know work at McDonald's, right? They work in fast food. They're hustling. You have to.
Sometimes I miss having a job like that.
Well, be careful what you wish for.
Well, at our age, we probably don't want to work that hard.
No, you don't. You don't want to grind yourself down into nothing. That's for young people. As a boss of mine used to tell me, I have a job here for weak minds and strong backs, you know? That's what we usually end up doing when we're younger. We work our butts off, and then you get older and you go, this is crazy. You know, you burn out. You
How
know,
many
like,
times a day do you go outside with the dog?
I would go out for about 3.5 and then come back in, go out for another hour, and then come back and go out again for another hour. It's about 5 hours, give or take. On a long day, maybe 7 hours. And it's
and you might take it on a walk? I mean, do you go on long walks?
Oh, yes, we do. You know, so that's a lot of work. Yeah.
It is. I saw a picture of the dog. He's medium size and brown, right?
Yeah, pretty dog. Oh yeah, absolutely. And dogs are full of energy. They want to run around. You know, they want to explore the planet, chase things. You know, wrestle with.
It's kind of like childcare.
Yeah. They are, you know, nonstop attention.
Well,
so it's not easy.
We're switching to the Rachel Ray cooking show. I'm making Katie's cornbread mix while we're on the phone. I'm at work.
Nice. Well, that's a good thing, though. You know, I mean, you're being constructive. But what is, besides, say, the clothing kind of stuff, what would you like to be doing if you had ultimate powers? You know, you had Hitler powers. You could set things up the way you want.
I don't know. I've been kind of down ever since Agatha died. Then my campaign ended, and Zach's leaving tomorrow, and I'm losing my sense of purpose.
Right. That makes sense.
Well, three things are ending all at once.
Right. Well, I guess
on a marginal scale, I want to become a Bible scholar. And I learned tonight, remember Pope Benedict, the one who was alive before the most current pontiff, the one Pope Francis? He wrote a dissertation on the appearance of Mary at Fatima in 1917, and I would like to read his dissertation on what conclusions he came to. Have you ever studied that concept of what happened when Mary appeared?
I've heard a lot about it, and I'd read some things about it, but refresh my memory because, you know, I've got a million things in my brain.
Okay, well, Lucia Santos and her two cousins were shepherds, and Mary appeared to them May 13th, 1917, in a bright, white, shining image, like a brighter than the sun. And she said that this is on the advent, well, 3 years into World War One, and Portugal had just been overtaken by a Republican government. I think it might have been some kind of other formal monarchy before that. Well, anyways, she told him that, would you be willing to suffer for me if I reveal some things to you? And she revealed that the world was at war and that they needed to pray in order to relieve the sorrow of the world. And then she came back five more times and she showed them a vision of hell. And then on the fifth time, 70,000 people gathered in the same culvert where she appeared, and they all saw the image of Mary, so it was verified. And they ended up building a church in that city in Fatima, Portugal, and they have a church exalting Mary. Now, in the first scene, it said something like Mary was exalted through, like she appeared on behalf of Jesus. Now, most Protestants only believe in the Holy Trinity, you know, God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. So,
right.
And usually when a representative of God appears, it's usually like the angel Gabriel. It's not the carnal Mother Mary who gave birth to the Son. So the only thing, there was a quote in there, the lady wrote it down years later and became a nun, St. Lucia. But the thing is that Mary mentioned the rosary in her appearance, and I found that fishy, that she would mention a man-made ritual in her appearance.
Right. And
are you still at work? Yeah. Go ahead.
I am. What I was going to say is the thing about the Catholic Church, you're very strong with traditions, superstitions, and certain things. I think some of them are valid. I think some of them are what people want. And by that I mean, you get Muslims, Muhammad having visions, Buddha being enlightened. You have all kinds of stuff where people tap into supernatural powers, entities, beings, things of that nature. Psychic phenomena, even. And some of it is, in fact, I would say a lot of it is real. The only question is it straight from God? Is it an illusion, a deception? There's all kinds of things to ponder. I kind of look at it this way. Follow the truth where it leads you. And If it brings you to a better place, a better state, that's cool. But I think a lot of this stuff is diversions, whether it's UFOs, whether it's the Bermuda Triangle, all these kind of different things that we can't quite explain. People kind of trip out on it. The fact is, what Mary, God let Mary, visit some people, and so they can worship her, among other things.
She didn't ask to be worshipped. Her message was more about bringing peace and reconciliation to the earth. Now, I'm upstairs and I don't have the stuff in front of me, but one of the visions on the second or third vision was she was a description of hell and how people would suffer if they didn't come to salvation. So
kind of like that. I mean, that's a reality. But on the other hand, it's like, how do people avoid hell? It's following by faith in Jesus Christ and through salvation, as compared to, listening to the Pope and doing rosaries and following the traditions to be baptized in the Catholic Church. So I think that's where things start to get a little fishy-wishy, But is God really going to let Mary appear to people?
I think back in those days, people, they were more religious because they had less material things and comforts.
In the New Testament, is there anywhere where Mary appeared to anyone was
she told
crazy?
Them to come back the same time, the 13th day. She came back May 13th, June 13th, July 13th, all the way through October. And towards the end, other people, once the kids started telling adults, the adults started showing up to see the appearance, and then it was verified. But the fact of the matter is another time in South America she appeared, I think it was South America, I don't remember, in a place called Guadalupe. They renamed it. So I don't know. I'm sure people have visions every day, but the significance of who knows what the significance of it is.
Well, I have friends that get into a lot of different paranormal things. They get into visitations. The scripture talks about if someone preaches another gospel, if another being or entity tells you this or that, you have to examine the spirits. And by that I mean, how do we get to heaven? And we're all going to die. So do we all make it to heaven? I mean, God.
Maybe, maybe not.
Right. That's a faith call, but the point is, God is a righteous God. And one of the things the scripture teaches is he's perfect. He's flawless. This starts the whole series, the whole ball rolling. Why did men sacrifice to God? Why did God instruct them to sacrifice, blood, by sacrificing an animal? It was to show that our lives aren't good enough and that it would be sacrificed, but rather than us, God allowed us to sacrifice animals. And until a more perfect sacrifice would come. And what was that perfect sacrifice? It was Christ Jesus. No one else, whether it's Buddha, Muhammad, Joseph Smith, you can get in any kind of religion, any kind of mind space. Is our righteousness good enough to get to heaven? Is anything we can do as a Muslim, as a Buddhist, as a Jehovah Witness, anything we can do good enough to merit heaven? And the answer from Scripture is no. There's only one sacrifice, God's sacrifice, which, in the fullness of time, he sent his son, Christ. Now, that's a faith call. I might be wrong. I could be full of baloney. But that's the Jesus of the Bible that I serve. The question is there anyone else that can do that for me? Is there any other way into heaven? And that's where everyone else plays their own little thing.
Well, that's the point I was kind of getting to, is that on earth we're limited. Now, I have this extra time on my hands this week. I don't have to do both jobs. I just have to do one job 12 hours a day. So the only way that I can empower myself is through more exercise, by running or jogging or swimming. That gives me strength and hope by movement. Now, some people have other passions, but I can't sit idle. My election's over, and I need something new to do. And maybe some people can go by year, just surviving and being in the survivor mode. But each week, I feel like I need something new to do.
Yeah, we do. We do in the bigger picture. You're right.
And maybe...
It's most
too bad.
Are in survival mode. Go ahead.
Well, we all are in the survival mode, but we have little bits of inspiration that come our way, and we have to figure out how to guide that inspiration into something concrete. But maybe we're not just set up for accomplishment. We're also set up for enjoyment.
You could. I mean, and I think once you've done everything, whether it's through Proverbs, talks a lot, or Ecclesiastes, talks about all the different things that we do. I think there's a certain point where once you've done it all, you go vanity, vanity, all the vanity and vexation of the spirit. So I think that's something that we all got to deal with at certain times, is like, how do we come to grips with all that stuff? And some people never do. Ecclesiastes and Proverbs, basically Solomon goes about to try and satisfy all these desires and see where they lead. He tried wine, he tried women, he tried riches. And these things here's the problem, they're all temporal things. We're spirit beings trapped in a temporal body. Temporary. So no matter what we do, even exercise, I'm a big exercise person. I am. After, I got to work out at least every other day. I really like it every day because of the high that you get off.
Well, your workout is driving 5 miles from one part of town to the other, too.
Just to start the job, yeah. And the point is that I love exercise, but I also have to realize it's just temporal. It's just, it's, in other words, if you don't work out for a week or two, you start losing the benefits, right? And there's a certain point where no matter what you do, when you die, you go, that's it. It's done. There's no extra benefit to it. And now we have eternity with our spirits. And what do we do in the spiritual realm? So Paul said, bodily exercise profits little, but it does profit a little, but it's just temporal. Now, in my case, I do like working out because I've seen people that are Christians that are old and, their bodies gave out on them. They're fat and overweight and they just couldn't function. And they were just victims of, the medications to treat their liver and their diabetes and their heart problems and all that stuff. So I do like being athletic and trying to keep my mind sharp, even if it's temporal. I'm kind of more into that than into the drugged out society that we've become.
Well, I think some forms of satisfaction, for example, if I was a researcher every day and I sat at my computer 6 or 7 hours doing research, that would be one minor way of fulfillment, but it would keep me occupied and out of trouble, but it wouldn't really do much to help save the world. So I guess what I meant is you were going along the lines of Solomon. I wasn't just talking about human fulfillment. I was talking about doing something meaningful, to occupy your time.
And that fulfilling.
Right, like if it gives me peace of mind and it keeps me out of trouble, that's one thing, but it might not translate into helping others. So as Christians, we kind of have to balance it out. Like it would be nice to work 3 hours a week at the Damiano Center in Duluth where people, the needy people come for clothes and food. I mean, we have to balance out those processes. We also could start our own Bible study series on the midweek show once a week. We could do another chapter out of James Bailey's book, the one that I mailed to you, and I just got myself another copy. So
I like.
Well, yeah, go ahead. There's not a lot. I don't have a lot more to say. I think we're going to end the episode in a little while, but I guess I do have a rather long conclusion tonight. So could I go first?
Yeah, and by the way, I do like where you went with this because it is very important. I'll give you an example. I would be totally in just almost, I wouldn't say humanistic, but in a kind of almost more natural situation. I'd be very fulfilled just playing guitar, writing music, recording it, practicing drums and keyboards, and working on vocals and shooting videos. I would be very content just, you know, going to the gym every day, working out, playing with kids, like have a couple kids and teach them how to sports, you know, baseball and basketball, football, that kind of stuff. Have a shown life. I would just have a blast with that. And along with having some, like, you know, gal that works out, that's athletic, be married and live that lifestyle, it'd be awesome. But in the end of it all, sometimes it's in the cards and sometimes it's not. You know, sometimes we just have to go with where the reality of our lives are at, you know.
You can fly to North Country and teach Lauren how to play basketball.
Yes.
He missed the football season, so now we have to move on to basketball.
Yes. Maybe he never would have gone atheist if I was around in his developing years.
Well, he'll change eventually. One thing that I'm thankful for is, though, that Zach, Lauren, and I walked one block north of our house tonight to Chester Creek, and there's a river and a stream running through it in between these giant rocks, and there's a bridge and a footpath, and that's the kind of thing I couldn't get in Los Angeles.
Nice.
But
so
I'm
gonna
make my
walk.
Yeah, it's a creek right by our house. It goes for over a mile. I guess my conclusion tonight is that, well, during this whole process with agathodyne, I was tempted to go back to gambling, but I didn't. And sometimes it's hard to stay on the straight and narrow, and I feel at times that my life is limited. Like, for example, I'll get off work at 9 in the morning, and I can't really fully plan my day because I have to get enough sleep in before I take Lauren to work at 3:30. So right now I'm in a functioning mode, but I don't feel like I'm in a high-flying mode. And I guess I have a lot of freedom at work to, you know, like do my religious studies and stuff. But sometimes I wish that I could just spread my wings and really become what I was intended to be. And I think with the advent of a 21-year-old young girl's death, that I feel like I haven't used my, I've used my time wisely because I'm pretty busy, but I could have done more and I didn't do it. So with that, I just have to kind of keep pushing forward till I find what the next brainstorm is or next point of enlightenment. I think I'll just have to sit down this winter and write a book because I need something higher to focus on. I just can't be swimming in this everyday stuff. I got to do something bigger and better.
I think you'll find some fulfillment in putting something in writing that God gave us the word. I think the radio show and things like that, it's the same to me as me performing live. It's good in the moment, and once the moment's done, although you do have archives, but it's kind of, it's more of a live medium. And I think if you put something in writing like a book, that seems to stand up over time. People will reference it, and they can read it, and it stands up more. And certainly that's why God gave us the Bible, gave us the Word, even though people try to cut it up and slice it into pieces. Where would it be if it was just oral, you know, tradition, as, say, the Kabbalah is? It's subject to change. It's subject to extreme misinterpretation. So I think that's a very good place to start. I think you kind of also in this conflict between the Jesus first 30 years and the Jesus the second 3.5 years. If you really want to accomplish a lot of these things, I think you'd have to kind of quit everything and, like Jesus, go in the desert and pray and go choose your disciples and, you know, be dedicated to this task hardcore. But the first 30 years of his life, he did live a godly life, being just a carpenter and a mama's boy and being in the community and someone that, you know, was respectable and did his stuff. So I think that's kind of where we're at, you know. I could quit everything and live in a van and play guitar and preach on the streets. But is that something that I can really offer other people to do? You know, like, this is the answer. Quit your job and your life, leave your kids, and be so super religious. I don't think that's offering people something tangible to aspire to, you know, in everyday life. Especially if you have kids, you have responsibilities you have to take care of. I think it shows.
Right. When you have kids, you're just sustaining yourself.
Yeah.
You can't
just go off
into Neverland.
I can tell you this, the song that you played in the beginning, you know, Carry On, it's the inspiration of my parents. They showed me how to live and how to be, and it was more than just talking about it. Their life was a message. Their life was a sermon for me to follow. So
that's cool.
I think in the end of it, you know, you may go, well, I really didn't accomplish things. It's like you made your stand. Everyone around you knows what you're about. And I think it's finding your purpose in the stand that you've made and not compromising. And when you do make mistakes, you get up and you keep going. The fact that you don't give up. My brother, I talked to him one time about music and, you know, I hadn't fulfilled a lot of stuff that I wanted. You know, I didn't tour the country. I didn't have a record that, you know, hit number top 40, you know, stuff like that. He said, no, he says, you're more successful. You're the most successful music person I've ever met. He said, what are you talking about? He said, no, he said, because you don't have all that stuff and you still keep going. You don't have the money. You don't have fame. You don't care. You know who you are and you keep doing it. And that's success. All these other people, you know, they got money and fame and they blew up. You know, whether it's Michael Jackson or Elvis or Whitney or, you know, or any celebrity out there. It's like anyone can you know, get excited when you're making a lot of money and people are worshiping you. But when you stand out in the crowd and you make your stand no matter what other people think, you know, it's no longer about the money or the fame. You just know who you are. That's success. And he said, you know, I because they have a determination you don't have. You take all that stuff away, you know, like with Elvis or Michael. You know, what happened at the end of their lives? They're locked in their little rooms getting high. They're not taking on the world. They were withdrawn. They had everything, and yet they let it all slip away. You know, I'm making my stand, and I'm not getting anything. You know, I'm killing myself to pay my bills, and yet I still try to find a way to record videos, you know, or write a song or perform. So I think it's very important what you're doing now, how you conduct yourself.
Well, I have one more year in the tundra, but I don't know. I can commit beyond that.
Yeah.
So, and I'm thinking of applying at Walmart.
Nothing wrong with that.
You know what? I need a busy job on the side, not one where I'm just sitting around. So,
yeah.
I'm going to end the show with Isaiah 60, and I'm going to start in the beginning, then I'm going to skip. So, and then you can do your conclusion. Isaiah 60. Arise, shine, for thy light is come, and the glory of the Lord is risen upon thee. For behold, the darkness shall cover the earth, the gross darkness the people. But the Lord shall rise upon thee, and his glory shall be seen upon thee. And the Gentiles shall come to thy light, and the kings to the brightness of thy rising. Lift up thine eyes round about and see. All they gather themselves together. They come to thee. Thy sons shall come from far, and thy daughters shall be nursed at thy side. Then thou shalt see and flow together, and thy heart shall fear and be enlarged, because the abundance of the sea shall be converted unto thee. The force of the Gentiles shall come upon thee. The multitudes of camels shall cover thee, the dromedaries of Midland and Ephah. All they from Sheba shall come, they shall bring gold and incense, and they shall show forth praises to the God. All the flocks of Kedar shall be gathered together unto thee. The rams shall minister to thee. They shall come up with acceptance on mine altar. And I will glorify the house of my glory. Who are these that I fly as a cloud, as the doves to their windows? Surely the isles shall wait for me, and the ships of Tarshish first, to bring thy sons from afar, their silver and their gold with them, unto the name of the Lord thy God, and to thy Holy One of Israel, because he hath glorified thee. And the sons of thy strangers shall build up thy walls, and thy kings shall minister unto thee. For in my wrath I smote thee, but in my favor have I shown mercy. Therefore thy gates shall be open continually, they shall not be shut day nor night, that men may bring unto thee the forces of the Gentiles, and that their kings may be brought. For the nation and the kingdom that will not serve thee shall perish, yea, those nations shall be utterly wasted. The glory of Lebanon shall come unto thee, the fir tree, the pine tree, and the box together, to beautify the place of my sanctuary, and I will make the place of my feet glorious. The sons also of them that afflicted thee shall come bending unto thee, and all that they that despise thee shall bow themselves down at the soles of my feet, and they shall call thee the city of the Lord, the Zion of the Holy One of Israel. Whereas thou hast been forsaken and hated, so that no man went through thee, I will make thee an eternal excellency of joy of many generations. Thou shalt suck the milk of the... I'm going to finish in a couple lines. Thou shalt suck the milk of the Gentiles, and shalt suck the breast of the kings. Thou shalt know that I, the Lord, am thy Savior and thy Redeemer, the Mighty One of Jacob. For the brass I will bring gold, for the iron I will bring silver, for the wood brass, and for the stones iron. I will also make thy officers peace and thy exactors righteousness. I'll just finish it. We're almost done. Violence shall be heard in thy land, wasting nor destruction within the borders, but thou shalt call the walls salvation and thy gates praise. The sun shall be no more thy light by day, neither for brightness shall the moon give light unto thee. But the Lord shall be unto thee an everlasting light, and thy glory, thy God, thy glory. The sun shall no more go down, neither shall the moon withdraw itself. For the Lord shall be thine everlasting, the days of thy mourning shall be ended. The people also shall be righteous, they shall inherit the land forever. The branch of my planting, the work of my hands, that I may be glorified. A little one shall become a thousand, and a small one a strong nation. I, the Lord, will hasten it in its time. I guess that was kind of powerful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I guess we just have to sustain ourselves and work and keep on going until the Lord returns.
That's it. You know, you nailed it on the head. It's like, just keep doing what you do. Keep living the life, being that example until you're taken, you know. And that is the walk of faith that we've followed and handed down from person to person, from family member to family member. And I think that's what stands up over time. You know, it's like the gospel goes on and on through our examples and what we hand our children. And they take it along to the next generation. So I think you can't do anything more than that, you know. God is bigger than all of that, bigger than who we are. And he'll make sure the message in the word continues beyond anything
we can do. We appreciate you joining us tonight, and you're off the hook till Sunday, and hopefully I'll get something done before then so I have something to show for it. Okay?
You already have tonight.
Thank you for joining us, and have a good night, okay?
God bless you, and God bless America. And keep rocking for Jesus.
Amen. Good night.